of the lectures we'll talk about the Magadha Vilna. And he was succeeded by his son, who was also the Magadha Vilna, known as Velvel. In any event, Reb Zalman Zeiv, in Yiddish, Reb Velvel, the Magadha Vilna. These were father and son for over 50 years were the Magadha Vilna. And one of them was called in the Din Torah. Five people came here. They came to Velazh and they sat in a bezin. And they decided and spelled out exactly what would be the authority of the Nitziv and what would be the authority of Reb Yosha Be'er. And it was split right down the line. Reb Yosha Be'er, Rosh Hashiva, he's in charge of, who knows, answering questions of Talmidim. I don't remember the fine details. And the Nitziv is in charge of something else. And they split right down the middle. It was absolutely even, so a very smart bezin. They didn't want to create tension. They divided right down the middle. Only one thing, the last paragraph said that the checks will be signed by the Nitziv. One small paragraph that said that the finances of the yeshiva will be controlled by the Nitziv. Reb Yosha Be'er got the message. And it says, Soloveitchiks are very smart. And he left the yeshiva. He stayed a short while. He was offered Brisk. He became a Bezdin of Brisk. And he became Rav of Brisk. He left the yeshiva. And now the yeshiva was entirely under the control of the Nitziv. And the Nitziv hired Reb Yosha Be'er's son, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, who also learned in the Velazh Yeshiva. Among the many people who learned in the Velazh Yeshiva. And he hired Reb Chaim Brisker, he wasn't called Reb Chaim Brisker then, he hired Reb Chaim Soloveitchik to become Ko-Rosh Yeshiva with the Nitziv. And in that period, when Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and the Nitziv were Ko-Rosh Yeshivas, this is the greatest period of Yeshiva, everybody came. Reb Shimon Shkop came, Reb Baruch Be'er Leibowitz came, all the great Gedolim and Rosh Yeshivas who had found all the other Yeshivas, they came to Volozhin to sit at the feet of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and the Nitziv. And that continued until 1892, and we don't have the time to go into details here, but many of you will know, there were maskilim in the yeshiva, there were forces that were anti the yeshiva, and these forces informed the government that there were no secular studies going on in the yeshiva, even though secular studies were to be going on in the yeshiva. And just to set the record straight, in the last 10 years of Velazh, approximately, from 1882 to 1892, mathematics, and language, Russian language, were taught in the Velazh Yeshiva. That was a concession made by the Nitziv, a couple hours a day. And it was a big machlokas, by the way, between the Nitziv and Reb Chaim Velazh as to who should teach Russian and mathematics. One held that only a Jew should teach it, and the one held that only a Goy should. If I'm correct, the Nitziv wanted a Jewish teacher, and Reb Chaim said, no, only a Christian teacher. And they hired the Christian teacher. And Reb Chaim's reason was that the Jews who could teach Russian or mathematics were, by definition, maskilim. And he did not want maskilim teaching in the Velazh Yeshiva. A Christian was fine. Everybody knows he's a Christian. He has no problem. And a Christian taught an hour a day, whatever it was, for those years. But that's not what the government wanted more than that. And the Nitziv tried to get away with it, but he couldn't get away with it. I'm saying this specifically because recently, not so recently, a famous book was published in America that you all know about, or some of you know about, My Uncle the Nitziv.
Became very famous.
And it's repeated in all the art scroll histories again that no secular studies were ever allowed in the Velazh Yeshiva, and in 1892 it was closed because secular study was forced on the yeshiva by the government. There was secular study, a modicum of secular study. There were Yaitzei, Yedei Chevasa, with perhaps less than an hour a day, I don't remember the exact amount of time. But the government came after informers from within the yeshiva and without went to the government and informed them that they really weren't doing any secular study in the yeshiva of any significance. Officers came here, governmental officials came here. I have a vivid description of it. I don't want to take the time now. While the Nitziv was sitting here, while the Bachman were learning the yeshiva, told all the boys they must leave Velazh immediately, and they locked the doors of the yeshiva, and the yeshiva was closed in 1892. Brokenhearted, the Nitziv left here. He had tremendous debts because there was a great fire in the Velazh yeshiva shortly before it was closed, late 1880s. The whole yeshiva burnt down, and a beautiful building was reconstructed, and this time it was a stone building. We're going to see a stone building of Velazh. Anyway, that yeshiva was closed. The Nitziv was heavily indebted. He had to pay debts that were owed. He didn't have the money, and now it's a closed yeshiva. He had to spend the rest of his short life raising money to pay off debts for a yeshiva that no longer existed. It's hard enough to raise his money for a yeshiva that exists. For a yeshiva that doesn't exist, it's almost impossible. And the poor man went to Warsaw, and we were in Warsaw recently, and we visited his grave. In Warsaw. He died in 1893. It did reopen the yeshiva. Because the building is standing. And the Nitziv and Reb Chaim Velazh was Velazh. You don't forget about Velazh. In 1895, the yeshiva of Velazh reopened. But it was a shadow of what it was. In the long, now, I have to tell you what happened. First of all, in 1892, the yeshiva closed. The Nitziv goes to raise money, dies in Warsaw. 1893.